Hello, friends, and welcome to this episode of The Clone Conspiracy, a podcast where we try to explain the history of Ben Reilly and just what the hell was going on with one of the most infamous comics and Spider-Man storylines of all time, the Clone Saga. I'm your host, Scott Free, and in this episode, The Clone Saga proper begins. Now, we left off at the end of our last episode with Spectacular Spider-Man 216. 1994, teasing a dramatic reveal as to the identity of the mystery man who had been popping up in cameos in various Spidey stories across 1993 and 1994. Now, I want to preface this episode by giving a thanks and a shout out to Andrew Golitz and former Marvel writer and editor Glenn Greenberg, the two guys behind the old Life of Reilly blog from the 2000s. Now, for the younger listeners, a blog was an online kind of journal. Of course, I know you know what a blog is, but this was a 35-part blog and column that recounted in detail the history and behind-the-scenes mess of the Clone Saga. It's an invaluable resource to fans of comic history, and to Spider-Man's history in particular. And anyone who works in this space is indebted to them for putting together a definitive reference resource. It's been a huge help in sourcing interviews, sourcing material, and I really just want to recommend it and give a shout out to those guys. Going back, Spectacular 216 by Tom DeFalco and Todd DeZago with Buscema on art. Spider-Man has been accused of attacking an innocent man. Don't really worry about it. This is tied into a lot of the ongoing plots in the Spider books, where Peter is losing touch with the Peter Parker part of his life and is becoming harder and more callous, and et cetera, et cetera. He notices the Scorpion, Matt Gargan, at the hospital in Forest Hills, where Aunt May, still comatose after her stroke, is staying. Spidey tracks into the sewers. He believes that Scorpion framed him for the attack. Beats the hell out of Scorpion and leaves. This is an iconic cover with Scorpion in the sewers. Meanwhile, we cut back across town to the hospital, where, for some reason, Peter Parker is also apparently there in Aunt May's room, even though we just saw him beating the shit out of Scorpion in the sewers. Wow, I wonder who this could be. As Peter, in air quotes, talks to his comatose aunt, a nurse points out the window. Spider-Man swings by. Peter panics and runs out of the room and books it up to the roof. And 216 ends with Peter Parker coming face to face with Spider-Man. Peter Parker and Spider-Man? What the hell? Now, you're smart people. I think. If you haven't figured out yet, as you sit there in your car or on the toilet or wherever you listen to podcasts and listen to a podcast about Ben Reilly, I don't know what to tell you. The air quotes, Peter Parker is the mystery man we've seen pop up these past few months. It's Ben Reilly. He's back. This leads directly into Web of Spider-Man 117. It's from 1994 and the start of the Clone Saga proper. It's the start of the first four-issue arc of the Clone Saga, appropriately titled Power and Responsibility. The story will run through all four Spider titles published in October 1994. And it establishes the model that will run through the various acts of the Clone Saga, where you get a 1 4-issue arc a month running through the four main titles. So if you wanted to get the full story, you had to buy all four of the main titles, and sometimes also the fifth title, Unlimited. It was marketing, baby. Now, Web 117, written by Terry Cavanaugh, with pencils by Stephen Butler and inking by Randy Emberlin. Stephen Butler is an artist who is particularly associated with the Clone Saga. He did a lot of work, particularly in the early portion. His art is great. He's still active. Really good. The dynamic. It's active. It's a lot of fun art. Now, 117 opens immediately after the events of Spectacular 216 with Peter, air quotes, and Spider-Man facing off on the roof of Forestall's hospital. The two are frozen when the issue opens, staring at each other in horror. "You can't be Peter Parker," stutters Spidey. "Wait, this is a mistake," the other guy says, trailing off. "I only wanted to see May and get out of here before..." Spidey cuts him off. "I don't care what kind of sick game you're up to, imposter. Doesn't matter if you're an other-dimensional doppelganger, a state-of-the-art replicoid, or the chameleon himself. You're not Peter Parker." Spidey takes a swing. Ben jumps, and the punch shatters a brick chimney where he'd been standing. Now, don't forget, this is Spider-Man who has just gone through the ringer with a series of very convoluted plots. In addition to the imposter beating a guy plot, he's also recently gone through the My Parents Have Returned from the Dead arc, where they turned out to be actually S.H.I.E.L.D. life model decoys. So this is a Peter Parker who is very on edge, very dissatisfied with his life as Peter Parker, and seeing this doppelganger is just yet another pile of shit that he's having to deal with, and it understandably sets him off. Ben then leaps off the rooftop, jumping to the next roof. "Just an incredible simulation," Spidey mutters, amazed, watching this other man leap, seemingly with his powers. We then get some of Ben's internal thought processes. Thought bubbles. Great. "This is exactly what I've been trying to avoid for years now," Ben thinks, leaping. He narrowly catches the ledge with his fingers. "And I'm too rusty for my own good these days. I've got to get with the program fast. This is the real thing I'm up against here." And "real" is all in caps and bold. Ben and Spider-Man then face off on the roof. Spidey is in a rage. Ben, not wanting to fight, and it's made clear, rusty with his powers after years of hiding, again tries to book it. They fight across the rooftops, with Ben desperately trying to get away and showing still that he has all the same powers as Peter. Great strength, durability, and shocking Peter, wall crawling. He runs up a wall, and the two of them, grappling, fall through a roof and end up in a workshop. Seems abandoned. "Peter," Ben starts. "Don't call me that," Spider-Man screams. "I hate Peter Parker." Again, this is a Peter who's really been going through the ringer and is at a peak of self-loathing. Now, we interrupt Spidey fight to cut to Ravencroft. If you're a new listener or new to Spider-Man, Ravencroft is essentially Spider-Man's equivalent of, for example, say, Arkham Asylum or The Raft. It's where a lot of supervillains associated with Spider-Man, particularly in the 80s and 90s, they get sent to Ravencroft. It's an asylum just north of New York City, maximum security, full of characters like Carnage and Shriek and so forth. So we smash cut to Ravencroft, and we get the introduction of one of the most confusing characters of the Clone Saga, one Dr. Judas Traveler, the walking retcon, the mess, the ageless prophet with seemingly godlike powers, a psychiatrist, an expert on evil, or just a crank. Judas Traveler is one of the most infamous bits of the Clone Saga. He is a veritable mess of a character, and very little about him makes sense. It's a lot. And as Glenn Greenberg said, commenting on Jewish Traveler, I, at this point, was not yet really involved with the Spider-Man books. The only thing I can really add is that no one, not the writers, not the editors, seemed to know who or what the hell Judas Traveler was. He was seemingly this immensely powerful, quasi-mystical being with amazing abilities, but what was the real deal with him? As I recall, J.M. DeMatteis really enjoyed writing him and had future plans for him. But to be honest, a character like Traveler didn't really fit in the Spider-Man's world. I think most people would agree with me that Spider-Man should be in more realistic, down-to-earth stories, and a character like Traveler doesn't really work there unless it turns out that he's just casting illusions. Sort of like Mysterio. But at that time, I know that as far as the writers were concerned, Traveler was indeed as powerful and as quasi-mystical as he appeared to be. And again, that's Glenn Greenberg from The Life of Riley. Now, Judas Traveler he's a weird, older-looking guy who looks like he plays bass in an Adamant cover band. It's a very distinct look. Google him. Seriously, it's a lot. We're introduced to him and his posse of followers as they sweep into Ravenloft. We then smash back to the main attraction and the big reveal. Peter and Ben are staring at each other. Noting that the doppelganger doesn't set off a spidey sense, Peter pauses. Why did you care about Aunt May? Who is she to you? Who? What are you? Ben tentatively reaches out. You may not believe what I say, Spider-Man, but you can't deny what you see. Lightning fast reflexes, remember. He yanks off Peter's mask. The two are face to face. I'm your clone, Ben says. We then get a panel of Peter's face up close, and he's enraged. Butler really kills it here. Peter's just drawn enraged, and there's tears going down his face. He pulls back his fist to swing on Ben. The Jackal's pawn, Peter yells. That was a long time ago, bro, and it looks like we've both made some changes since then. Ben suddenly kicks, rolls, and throws Peter hard against a wall. But by the time you wake up, I'll be long gone. Again, Peter slides to the floor unconscious. Again, don't forget, Ben has all of Peter's strength. He really just whips him straight into that wall. We then cut back to Judas Traveler and his band of freaks at Ravenloft. These are Scryer, who's the sort of tall, pale, sheet white man in a cloak and hood. Mr. Nacht, who wears a trench coat and dark glasses. And Chakra, who is a young woman of Indian descent. And there's some others, but these are really the three sort of most important ones. They're at Ravenloft. Why wouldn't they be? Dr. Traveler, we're told, is a leading expert on evil or something. Again, it's not well defined. He goes through Ravenloft visiting the various inmates to study their evil and comes to a conclusion. They all hate Spider-Man. Is Spider-Man the cause of their evil? Or is he a force set up to oppose their evil? Who the fuck knows? Judy doesn't. But he does know that he wants to seize control of Ravenloft. Traveler, using his seemingly vast powers, subdues the head of Ravenloft, Dr. Kafka, and with a wave of his hand, seems to teleport her outside. We see him also interacting with the various inmates, like I mentioned, Shriek, Carnage. He seemingly uses his powers to separate the Carnage symbiote briefly from Cletus Kasady, who screams in horror. We're made to see from these sequences that Judas Traveler is the real deal. Very powerful. We then get Chakra, Judy's good Judy, appears to Spider-Man, groggily recovering after the fight with Ben, who has run. She appears as the sort of, like, spectral, ghostly figure in an astral projection. She appears to him and issues a challenge. Judas Traveler will kill all the inmates, Ravencroft, unless Spidey can stop him. But if he does, all the inmates will go free. A no-win situation, made worse by another display of Judas Traveler's powers. He catches a bunch of bullets that cops shoot at him. Ben, meanwhile, watches Peter head off to Ravencroft. We see Ben in front of a crate that says, Fragile. Ironic. Spider-Man's in no condition to face trouble alone, Ben thinks, which leaves me with two choices. I can go after him to help. As he's thinking this, he pulls a Spider-Man mask out of his backpack. Funny. Never thought I'd even consider using this stuff as anything but souvenirs, or get back to May Parker, who I came here for. Is this it? Is Ben Riley ready to accept the responsibility that comes with his great power? You will have to tune in to our next episode to find out, as we get the Spider-Man and Ben Riley team up. And that, friends, concludes this episode of The Clone Conspiracy. So get your pouches and baby blue hoodies ready, because we are good to go.